discussing the ideas, the challenges, and the technology of the crypto economy. This is a Crypto Economy Chat. All right, crew, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. Sorry for missing the episode yesterday. If anybody caught my tweet, the wife and I went out early in the morning before I even had an opportunity to jump into any of my recording or anything. And then one errand turned into another, and we were literally busy the entire weekend. And it was like 5 something in the afternoon when I was like, holy crap, I'm not even going to get home in time to have an episode today. So I did miss the episode yesterday, and that sucks, but I got a really fun one today. We've got a crypto chat with Citizen Bitcoin. It is Brady from the Citizen Bitcoin podcast. He is host over there with Tommy. I just recently did a show with Brady on his podcast talking about Eric Wall and all the ICOs and stuff. And today we're going to be discussing the entire scope of Bitcoin education in the sphere today, and how to look, how to filter, who to listen to, all kinds of crazy stuff. It's a really fun discussion. But before we get into it, I have a couple of fun things that just happened over the weekend or today. Like this morning, Casa Hodl announced that they have a plug-and-play full Bitcoin and Lightning node device. It's basically a Raspberry Pi with a 1 terabyte hard drive, firmware, software, all that stuff already installed. They've got a custom interface that looks really, really simple to use. So if you're looking to they're looking to ship in October. So if you want to start playing around and tinkering with Lightning in a really easy, just straightforward way, plug it in and basically let it go if you don't even want to bother with it. It's got autopilot built in, so it will manage your channels for you. Just fund it with some Bitcoin. You've got a Lightning node and a Bitcoin node. And that's just really awesome. It took me a minute or so arguing myself. They've only got 100 for their initial rollout, and they plan to start shipping in October. So I hope, I'm fingers crossed, I've gotten in with the first 100 because I want that sucker. I want to play around with it, and I want to set it up for online shop and all that great stuff. So just wanted to make you guys aware that that is on the horizon and definitely something to explore. That's with Casa Hodl. I'll include a link in the description, obviously, so you can go check it out. Another cool thing is Samurai Wallet has just reached out to try to get, I think it's beta testers for their iOS wallet. That's the Sentinel wallet. So it looks like we got iOS wallet finally on the horizon, and I am really excited about that. So if you want to check that out, they've got their email posted in the Telegram chat. So you can jump over there and chat with the devs, team members, and all the other community around it, and talking about all the cool stuff going on with that project. And I have actually reached out to them by email and Telegram to see if anybody would like to come on the show, because I would love to dig into the brain of one of their team members about all the awesome stuff being integrated into that project and future plans. Unfortunately, they are very busy and politely declined, saying it will probably be towards the end of this year before they really have any schedule for that. But maybe if you go over there, show them some love and let them know you want to hear them on the podcast, that would be wonderful. Maybe don't make them hate me, but throw in a good word. Let them know I'm legit and really would love to talk to them. Let's see. Oh, also got a donation. Somebody sent me a couple of bucks over the weekend. Thank you so much. That was awesome. Again, it pays for my coffee in the mornings, and I could not be happier. Coffee is the fuel that runs this show. So if you want to buy me a coffee, please donate to the show. That would be amazing. It's super wonderful to know that people are out there appreciating it, because it is a ton of work. I will always have my Bitcoin donation address available for those people. And thank you so much, anonymous user of the Bitcoin network, for making sure I do not fall asleep while reading hours and hours of stuff about Bitcoin every day. All right, guys, let's jump in. This is a crypto chat with Brady from Citizen Bitcoin Podcast. All right, welcome back to another crypto chat. We have got Brady on the show today. He is the host, or host, and Tommy is the co-host from Citizen Bitcoin, but we got Brady here today. So welcome to the show, man. It's good to have you.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's good to be here. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, cool. I just went through in the last episode when I was telling everybody about the fact that we were going to do a recording together.
Yeah.
I was going through trying to figure out which ones. I thought I had been skipping around your podcast like a whole bunch, but apparently I had just listened to each of the ones since the quick read when you first asked me. So it was like those four or five, whichever it was.
Yeah.
But I've been really enjoying yours, and like, I hope my listeners actually go over there and check out some of the stuff that y'all are doing, because specifically one of the episodes, like, y'all just really hit a ton of bullet points. Whereas like my stuff is, here's one topic, let's read an article and talk about that one thing. Y'all go through a lot in one episode, which is really cool, because it's kind of a good aggregate, I guess you could say.
Yeah, it's kind of a contrast to what you're doing, because we only do a show like every other week. And I've kind of been interspersing some crypto quick reads as inspired by your podcast in between them. But yeah, Tommy and I, you know, we got full-time jobs and stuff, and so we can only get together every couple weeks. And it just started by us, you know, getting together and chatting about Bitcoin, and we're like, oh, let's start recording them, and started publishing them, and it's cool, because it's a kind of a forcing function for us to learn or dive a little bit deeper, or ask a few more questions, so that we're a little bit more sure about what we're saying on the show, since it's going out on the air, and it's been a good way for us to learn. So
awesome. Yeah. It's funny how that always seems to be the way it starts. Like, oh, we're just talking about Bitcoin, you know, let's just record it.
Exactly.
That's kind of how mine started. I would sit alone in my house and just talk to myself for hours out loud. And then I decided one day I was going to turn my microphone on.
I'm glad you did. I've learned learned a ton through your podcast. And I think, you know, people who have joined after, you know, sometimes since the beginning, which is probably most of your listeners, I know, like, going back and looking at that feed of 140 some episodes now, is that right?
Yep, 143 today. What?
Yeah, 143. Might be intimidating, but man, put it on like 1.5 or 2x and just go back to the beginning, and you're going to get an amazing, just like, Bitcoin education journey. I've listened to every single episode at this point. I started listening around 40s with the Lightning Network podcast or episodes. There was like a series in the late 40s, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went back and picked up all the rest, but it's good stuff.
I think that was actually my first like really big like amp of listeners, actually, was that one you were talking about, the 47, 48, 49, and 50, which were Aaron Von Wertham's breakdown of the entire Lightning Network, and then my article so good to follow it up.
Yep.
I still I'll go back and listen to them just to get a refresher myself.
And I thought it was great too, because it was the first time you'd read one of your articles, is that right?
It was my very first article.
I remember that being, you know, I think, important point in the show. And since then, your commentary is really, you know, you've devoted more time to it, and it's expanded. And man, there was one epic show just a couple of weeks ago. I think I messaged you about it. I was like, it was the one where you went on a like 45-minute commentary or something, and got pretty ranty. And I loved it. Oh man, it was so good. Anyway.
Let's get into Bitcoin education stuff. That's what we're here to talk about. Let's here to learn about Bitcoin. So you we were going over the notes and stuff, and we were talking about the idea of building a filter. We kind of chatted about this with the ICO stuff and Eric Wall's thing, specifically because during the hype bubble, filtering is incredibly difficult. But why don't you kind of break down your thoughts on that and what you mean exactly by building a filter?
Yeah, so kind of the framework that I approach learning from in general is the idea of building a filter. And that is, the first step is to identify the people or sources of information that you're going to trust, right? Education is, unlike the Bitcoin system itself, education's a trusted thing. You got to trust people. And, you know, science is great because, and math is great because it reduces the need to trust people's opinions and reduces subjectivity, et cetera. But of course, you know, the dissemination of scientific information is never, it's not objective. There's a lot of, you know, just opinion, basically, as soon as you've done your study and interpretations start to kind of take over. And it's impossible, I think, or really difficult to become a subject matter expert on everything that you would need to be a subject matter expert on to really, really understand Bitcoin from first principle, you know, from the whole system, from technology to economics to, you know, everything, cryptography, et cetera. So you're gonna have to trust some sources, especially at first. And that filter is gonna be really important. So that's, I think that process is, I enjoy it actually. I usually, like, I'll go on Twitter and I'll find some of the key questions that, like, when I came into Bitcoin last year, May 2017 or so, is kind of when I really started diving deep on it. It was just a process of identity. It was like, well, at that point it was, you know, what are the altcoins was my first big question, of course. Mm-hmm. And then the scaling debate was happening. And so I had to, you know, kind of look at both sides, and I followed who appeared to me to be the most credible based on their, you know, work on Medium and Twitter, et cetera. And, you know, I listened for facts and sound arguments and people who are willing to listen to other people who are being reasonable and engaging with them in a reasonable way. It's just super hard with all the noise, right? And that's what we were talking about, all the trolls and then, you know, the sock puppets, et cetera, whether or not even that, I assume that probably actually does happen. But, you know, even if there are people aren't paid, there's just plenty of people who enjoy being trolls. And so they'll pick a side and start trolling, you know?
It's interesting. Like, I think the filter problem is one that I mean, it's something that I very much everybody has to do, but I kind of got really lucky in being early on because there wasn't much to filter.
Yeah.
You know, back in 2011, there weren't all these shills. There weren't a thousand scams. Well, there were scams, but most of them were just exchanges that had no idea what they were doing. And or, you know, like darknet market mixers or whatever that would just run off with your money. But that's a very simple way to filter out, you know, just don't give other people your Bitcoin.
I think that's a good point. And the whole idea of HODL, what I've learned is you can just really simplify things down by being like, all right, you don't even need to worry about the altcoins. Just learn Bitcoin, right?
Yeah.
You don't need to worry about trading. Just hold it, you know? And then really focus on how things work and big picture, long-term thinking.
Yeah. I've seriously considered reading the, that iHoldl post, that drunk iHoldl post on the podcast.
I think I did read it on one of our episodes, actually.
Did you read
it? On an early one. Yeah, I think I did. It is hilarious.
filtering is a far more painful challenge today because when you first get in here, you don't know how to judge what. There's so much stuff. You have no basis yet to even judge what is fact or fiction in Bitcoin and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, there's not an immediate, like, you know, standard or reference that says, oh, well, you should go here to know that this is fact.
Right.
So it's, I mean, like the discussions about Bitcoin energy that we've talked about, like the energy use, like it's so hard because you'll have somebody that has these seemingly explicit facts about numbers and kilowatt hours and stuff, but completely miss the understanding or the underlying point of what is actually occurring.
Or the way they got those, you know, got to those numbers.
Or how they got those numbers.
Exactly. How they measure things or what they decided to include or not include.
Some of them are absolutely absurd.
Absurd.
The 1% of the world's energy usage is is absolutely ridiculous.
Right now it is
not. It's yeah. Yeah. It'll probably get there.
Yeah. Let's hope.
I hope so. Yeah.
and let's hope it's all, you know, renewable energy that's would otherwise be lost, you know, to
that's one thing in that debate that
yeah.
Of course, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole, but yeah.
Sort of sealed it up for me too.
The incentives. Right. Everything about the incentives are all that matter in that regard. And there is literally nothing that has as direct a relationship between hash power and cost or energy consumption as Bitcoin mining. It's literally like putting a direct dollar price on it.
Yep.
You could not have better incentives for renewable energy. And there was a great article. I'm going to read this one on the podcast. I've got this in my list. There's a great one talking about how Bitcoin mining is the only like producible asset that doesn't have to worry about the inconsistency of a lot of renewable energy sources like wind energy, or they used an example of a geyser, is that you can always use that energy and turn it into Bitcoin. Whereas in any other context, you can't run your blender on a geyser, and have it run for a couple seconds and then just sit there for a couple hours.
It's the cheapest energy in the world. It's free, basically. I mean, and there's even like companies in Texas that natural gas producers that would vent off natural gas because there's not enough demand for it at that moment, you know, but they're pumping it out or whatever, however they extract it.
Just totally going to waste.
And it's just literally going up into the atmosphere, burning off because they can't do anything with it. Well, they're capturing that methane and mining Bitcoin with it. So, you know, then the miners turn off when they don't need it and it's super efficient for them.
Yeah. It's so sad to see environmentalists get angry at something that I would argue is probably the best natural incentive they could ever hope to achieve.
I would consider myself an environmentalist, I guess, or a conservationist. Like I'm concerned about making sure that we preserve our natural spaces on this planet because they're so, I mean, they're such a rare resource, right?
I'm
definitely concerned. So I would encourage anybody who is also concerned about those things to start supporting Bitcoin and buying Bitcoin and helping the you know kind of transition to hash power being 100% renewable. There's no reason it shouldn't be. So
Okay, that was a heck of a segue, but
there we go.
We'll get back to it. All right. I do that.
No, but one thing actually to take us back that I was thinking and I kind of bookmarked was I think when you're setting up your filters, like one of the first rules you should really look at is the Lindy effect. I think it applies to educators as well, right? So people who have been around for a long time and have had their ideas tested and they've produced a lot of work and publicly and put it out there and had it tested and questioned, like Andreas Antonopoulos, right? So he was sort of I went to the Internet of Money 1 and 2. And when I, you know, after I, you know, I spent the first
I must have talked about the Lindy effect, but just in case, the Lindy effect is the basic principle of the longer something exists or has been around and survived, essentially, the longer one can expect it to continue to work.
So
it's just the basic of, okay, this thing has been around for 15 years. I have very little reason to think it's going to collapse or disappear tomorrow because it has survived for 15 years.
So
you're talking about this in the context of like Andreas Antonopoulos's understanding and explanations of Bitcoin all the way back to 2010 and 11 apply still today and have been playing out exactly what he has talked about in
for the most part, for sure.
Pretty epic accuracy.
So I mean, his credibility is high, right? So I would put him, you know, high up in my list of trusted people in my filter. And that's, you know, that's what I did. But I would say like the first few months, I was just looking at Reddit and Twitter and YouTube and some podcasts. But most of them were like, you know, altcoin market, altcoin trading, altcoin markets and stuff. Cause I was sort of, you know, what's a good word for it? I was like enchanted by this, you know, like game that was going on. You know, who doesn't like to play a good game, right? And this is just like, there's a lot of information asymmetry, and with a little bit of research and like getting into the right Slacks or Reddits or whatever, maybe you could like find out what is real and what's not, and gain an edge. And I played that game for a while, and it was fun, but man, it was terrible. Like in the end, yeah. It was like 6 weeks of trading and like being up all night. This is a 24/7 market. I fancied myself a trader. I was like, I'm going to learn technical analysis, and was like watching these people on YouTube, you know, drawing triangles on charts and all that shit. You know? Yeah. It's just like, so when I, you know, found Andreas and started watching his videos, and then read Internet of Money 1 and 2. And then I got it on Audible so I could listen to it again, and, you know, went through it again a couple of times at 2x speed, and really started to get more of a grasp of what Bitcoin is. Then that's where I started the walk toward Bitcoin maximalism. And I think we started the podcast sort of like, it was started in January of this year. So I was sort of like halfway along that walk and pretty much there. And I think the early episodes to like maybe episode 10 or 11 or 12, you'll kind of see like we finished it off basically. Like we did a podcast about Ethereum and why it's, you know, the critiques of Ethereum, and then EOS and Bcash. And we did a couple episodes on Bcash and mm-hmm. scaling debate. I wrote an article about just called Why Roger Ver is Wrong About Bitcoin Scaling. And, mm-hmm. You know, that was kind of my way of really making my decision on, is it, you know, is this way of scaling better or this way?
Yeah.
And in researching Lightning Network and all that stuff. But now I've got to the point where I'm fully in the Bitcoin maximalist camp, just because I think, you know, I got there, I did my own research, I got there by myself. And I think it's, you know, the most correct interpretation of what's really happening right now. So that's where I am at this point.
Yeah. Okay. So have you kind of stopped? This might actually be a good place to hit one of the questions I had lined up, but have you basically, you're done with trading all the technical analysis?
Okay. Oh yeah. So. I got lucky and it worked out for me because there was a bull market and it was almost impossible not to like make some more
not
Bitcoin,
to make money. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, and of course I was measuring everything in Bitcoin, which was a good, I had the sense enough to do that at least, you know, so, you know, I wasn't like making the mistake of watching the dollar value of my portfolio, quote unquote. Yeah. But yeah, I sold everything out of all the altcoins in like January, and I had a big, you know, tax mess to sort out.
Oh man, that was
yeah.
Me both, man. Good lord.
So it's just not worth it at all. It makes no sense. You have it 24/7 market. You can never keep up with it. 95% of traders lose in the end anyway. And you know, you just got to be almost insane person that doesn't sleep, and also really friggin' smart to do well. Like you need to be writing
really
your own.
Emotionless.
You have to make sure
that you're going strictly by a technical analysis, and if it does not go your way, you leave. You
right.
know, there are guys, no fear, like just
right.
just strict robotics.
yeah. You have to follow your system. Once you start injecting your emotion into it and second guessing yourself, it's done. And you get wrecked. So anyway, I was fortunate enough to sort of wise up in time, and you know, paid my taxes off and all that. So I'm just not touching it anymore. I'm just accumulating.
Got you.
Yeah.
With that though, do you think in regards to Bitcoin education, it seems like everybody goes down that rabbit hole and mm-hmm. people start because speculation is a huge part of the market right now.
Yeah.
I'm kind of with you is that like, I actually still do actually do it like on mm-hmm. like with a very, very small amount of money just so that I can stay, I guess I have stopped watching small charts. I just stay away from those completely, but like on daily and weekly charts, mm-hmm. I would try to keep my mind clear on what I think the general trend of the market is.
Sure.
Particularly with the volatility, you know, when you've got 20,000 one day and 3 months later it's 6,000.
Yeah.
Do you think it's pertinent to teach looking at charts and just seeing like broad trends with the
Yeah.
Screaming disclaimer that you should not be trading, but like you can at least get an idea of what's broadly happening in the markets. Or do you think it's just it's like giving somebody a little bit of heroin and saying, don't do it again. And, you know, sending them down a path of drug addiction. Like, totally. What's your thoughts on that?
Yeah. I mean, if I were to build a Bitcoin education company or business, which is, you know, we've kind of been talking about, chatting about back and forth, since we're both interested in it and got together to talk about today, I don't think I would talk much about trading. I think you'd have to cover it briefly and talk about the basics and talk about, you know, why it's probably not a great idea for you. I do watch the charts, you know, like I'll still look at TradingView, but I watch like the weekly chart or monthly charts and look at the long-term trends, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They're still fun. They're fun to look at. It's like, you know, it's like a sports ball thing. It's like watching the scores of your favorite, you know, team, or like watching the table of some Premier League soccer team or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's the number that everyone watches. Right. Mm-hmm. But I would say just listen to Ansel Lindner's Bitcoin and Markets, and that's like all you really need to do. And then you'll be up on everything, fundamentals and price stuff. And
Ansel Lindner's
Ansel Lindner Bitcoin and Markets podcast. It's one of the best podcasts out there, and it's the only one that really does like the market analysis thing well. So
interesting. I haven't checked that one out. People there.
Yeah, you'll love it. It's good.
All right, I will do that. Okay. All right. So you got into this, May 2017. What were to you, and this could include just your filter of like who you were listening to, who you stumbled across, and maybe was there anything specific that said this person is trustworthy or this person is saying something like worth listening to and exploring further?
Yeah.
And what specific education resources did you find? Like, what were your go-tos for people who are getting into it now and you don't have anything reliable to grasp onto?
Yeah. So what I found at first is not what I would recommend now for somebody just getting into the space. Mm-hmm. So I'll just skip to kind of what I've decided what I would recommend to somebody asking me now, which I get that question quite a bit, right? So I think there's the trilogy of Bitcoin you start with, which is the Internet of Money 1 and 2 and the Bitcoin Standard. That gives you the technical foundation and the economic foundation of the system.
That's the Internet of Money by Andreas.
Yeah.
And then the Bitcoin Standard. What was the other one?
The Internet of Money 1 and 2 I'm counting as the first and second book of the trilogy, I guess. And then
1 and 2, there's two of those?
There's two of them now. Yeah, there was one that came out last year. All new material.
Interesting. I must have only read the first one. I had no idea there was a second. Okay, cool.
Yeah, there's a second one now, which is good. It's a good update. And then the Bitcoin Standard by Saifedean Ammous. And then I think, you know, if you're looking at the trilogy here, you know, like Lord of the Rings analogy, I would say the white paper is The Hobbit. So read the white paper first, and then go into Internet of Money 1 and 2 and Bitcoin Standard. That's what I tell people. And I tell them very clearly, like, just don't worry about altcoins. Just don't even worry about it. Learn about Bitcoin. Think about it. And if it's something that you decide you, you know, believe in, then we can talk about how to buy it or whatever, if you want. But you know, it's got to be a long-term investment, and this is a speculative play. It's very risky. It may fail. There's a lot of ways it could fail. But you know, at the same time, you know, it's 10 years old. There's a lot of de-risking that has happened over the past few years. There's a lot of infrastructure, mainstream adoption, et cetera. So there's a lot of, you know, de-risking that has happened over the past few years. And you know, I think it's obviously a sound investment, but people have to make their own decision and do their own research. And that's where I recommend people start.
Did you have, delved into the technical aspects, yourself? What specific resources had you found on that?
Yeah. So I used, lop.net/bitcoin.html.
Oh yeah. The golden source of
There's great stuff there. And if you're, you know, I am not a all-star developer or anything like that, but I understand development and I've done it and I've led, you know, development teams and product teams, building web products. So I can get onto GitHub and read and understand an issue queue and submit to, et cetera. So I think if you are someone who's, that sounds interesting to, or you've done that in the past, I think getting onto a prod like the Bitcoin project itself, getting into that Slack and getting into the watching the Bitcoin repository on GitHub, and then also watching like LND or pick a implementation of Lightning and watch that. And I'm also picked a wallet project to watch. So I've been watching the Lightning Zap Wallet, Jack Mallers project on GitHub, and just submitted my first issue actually to the issue queue there a couple of days ago. So I'm just kind of testing the app and maybe weigh in on some UI, UX decisions, things like that. But it's a great way to, it's amazing actually that it's even an option that you can just, that's one of the amazing things about open source software. You can be a part of it if you want to. It's really, GitHub makes it super simple.
Honestly, I think that's probably one of the best resources, particularly if somebody is interested in like, and huge like mountainous sized grain of salt here, but if you're interested in altcoins and ICOs, the fact that almost every one of these projects, and if they don't, I would never touch it, but have like a Slack or a Discord where you can chat with the developers.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
With Bitcoin developers, like,
yeah,
the amount of access that you have. It was funny. That was one of the reasons why when I was originally looking at privacy coins that had interested me, because that topic specifically is, I think, crucial to the entire space. I would go in and look. I remember somebody had told me about Verge, and I was like, all right, let's see what this is about. And I went in and chatted with some of the developers, and I specifically never touched it, even though I could have made a monumental amount of money.
Yeah.
Nobody else did this and they just bought it. Regardless, I'm still not touching it. But I went in and asked one of the developers, like, okay, you know, what's your supply schedule? Like, what level of obfuscation is at the blockchain and stuff? And he'd be like, we don't mix or anything at the blockchain level. And I was like, what? Like, how do you call yourself a privacy coin? It's like, well, the wallet has Tor. And I was like, connect any wallet over Tor. Why do you have a new token? Like, I just, and I was polite to the guy, you know, but he was really defensive and just like, no, you want to be able to prove a receipt. It's like, if I have the hash, I can always prove the receipt. You can't, you can do that with Monero, but I was immediately like, I'm staying away from this thing. And it was specifically because I could go to the very source, have a conversation and be like, well, this is not anything to
that. Is do your own research right there, like that's the epitome of it right there. You can do that.
And I don't know anything else that you can really have that level of access with. Like, that's
absolutely it's unprecedented really in like human society. I think I don't know if that's a pretty broad statement, but I mean I'm thinking about it, and I don't understand when in the past you could basically permissionlessly be a part of the core development team, or at least observe them, of a global money system, right? A distributed system of this magnitude. So yeah, it's pretty amazing.
That's pretty nuts to think about it. Like, imagine going up into a Slack and having a chat with, it's like talking to the Federal Reserve chair or whatever. It's like, I don't think you really got this supply schedule worked out very well. It's like,
Janet. I really disagree with you, Janet.
I really don't think negative interest rates are the answer here. But okay, so I just wanted to mention a couple things that I specifically, and these are more on the technical side. Jameson Lopp is always a great one to follow, and Lopp.net was a huge resource for me.
Yep.
Even early on, because that's been around for a while.
Lindy effect again. Yeah, it's been around for a long time.
There you go.
And it's been, contributed to by the community and Jameson. I trust him as a filter. So he's one of those people.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen or heard of blockchaindemo.io or coindemo.io?
I don't think I have.
Those are excellent. I don't see anybody else. I don't see them mentioned anywhere, and I don't even know how I stumbled upon them.
This looks cool though.
But yeah, they're really, really interesting because it literally just walks you through the process and you're just making your own little mini blockchain. You can add peers, send transactions. You can change blocks earlier and it shows how everything goes invalid. So you have to line up hashes and you have to correct the information if you change it. And specifically you can hit a button. The thing I loved most about it is that it will explain what's happening in English. And then you can hit a button and it will flip the thing over at every single stage and say, here's the code that regulates this. And then it will just show you the exact scripts and the code that is going on behind the scenes so that peers can connect, so that peers decide whether the block is valid or the hash is on top of the previous hash, so on and so forth. So, and I go through it every once in a while. I still don't understand every individual piece of it, but I felt like it's an incredibly good visual and interactive source for kind of exploring how those things work. And I've really enjoyed both of them.
I'm looking forward to playing with this. This is really cool.
Yeah, definitely check it out.
UI and UX is beautiful and cool.
Yeah, somebody spent a lot of work on that. Like those, they did a good job.
Well done.
But then there's Coursera.org. The number of courses that are out there now that are just really technical and explain the stuff. They're not all perfect. Some of them are kind of elementary, I guess you could say. But you know, they make great introductions. I would want them to go into more detail, and hardly any of them that I have stumbled upon, I'll just kind of turn some of them, like the Princeton University one, or I'll turn them on in the background just to have them playing while I'm working on other stuff, because I don't really have to focus on them, but I catch things every once in a while.
Yep.
None of them really talk about the really important stuff, like money, the philosophy, the Austrian economics. I've had a number of them kind of mention it.
Yeah.
But it's almost universally just like, this is a block and this is a blockchain. And I think those other things are incredibly important, but they still are wonderful resources on the technical topics specifically.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot out there. I feel like there's a need, and I'm not sure if there is right now, but I think as we continue up adoption curve of Bitcoin, there will be, and maybe it's, and we can talk about the timing. Maybe it's the next bull run, and it's now's the time to get started. But I think there's a place in the market now or in the nearest future for a for-profit, world-class Bitcoin education company, a service that's online that makes instructors or people available to answer questions, to have conversations, and obviously online courses that kind of address all aspects of Bitcoin to various degrees of depth. And I this is why kind of the broader idea I had when I started the Citizen Bitcoin podcast. I only have time right now really for something on the side, and so it's a hobby podcast right now. But the broader idea and the reason I named it Citizen Bitcoin was to, build a business that can produce good citizens of Bitcoin. And to me, a good citizen of Bitcoin is someone who's taking personal responsibility, running your own nodes, securing your own keys, doing your own research, and I think there's a space for a company that can provide top quality education that's done that filtering for you for the most part, but is transparent about that, and continues as Bitcoin evolves to bring in people on both sides of an important debate, but bring in people who are reasonable, and have sort of a closed garden safe, the phrase safe space is so like politicized, but that's not what I don't mean it in that way, but have a place where it's sort of regulated in a sense or filtered, right? And that you can trust are going to be people who are reasonable and thoughtful and considered and considerate when they discuss these important decisions that need to be made. And I think that would be a major service to the community, or well, not the community. I'm trying not to use that word either, but to Bitcoin, and to growing a successful and usable and making Bitcoin the best it can be. I think we really need to get people, educate people in that way.
And I just had the episode recently about the Bitcoin residency by Chaincode Labs.
Yeah.
Then you've got like Programming Blockchain with Jimmy mm-hmm. Song. Mm-hmm. You've got Nicholas Dorier's and the One Vortex's course. There's a lot of things like this, but
kind of popping up now. And it,
so you know, many and of them, though, like
Andreas
like,
has been able. Sorry, go ahead.
The thing you mentioned though specifically was having people available and having an always online resource is all of these other things like Programming Blockchain is. It's like a 2-week thing in California. And I'm like, I can't go to a 2-week thing in California. And
I think Programming Blockchain is actually just 2 days. And he's doing one from Chicago.
Chaincode Labs. That's the week
that's
longer.
The 2-week one. Yeah.
Okay.
That's the
one. Yeah.
Yeah. Jimmy's is just 2 days and he is doing one. I don't, or maybe already has, I don't know. That's available online too. So like,
Oh, it is available online now.
Yeah, there's still only a certain number of seats, but you can join virtually. The one that he was doing in Chicago, and I think it might still be upcoming, but I heard him say something about it on one of his videos.
Gotcha.
But yeah, that's a good example. And I think, you know, Andreas has been able to make a business out of Bitcoin education. Jimmy Song is the Nakamoto Institute, and like Pierre and Rochard and Michael Goldstein. Saifedean has launched a Patreon and has his book sales to help. I'm sure that hopefully at some point will add up to something that's like sustainable income and revenue for him to keep doing mm-hmm. his work. You know, so it's starting to happen, and the people who are most trusted are the market, you know, justly is rewarding them with sustainable revenue to keep doing that work. And I think that time might be now. We could talk, what do you think? I mean, we're both sort of started our podcast for the kind of the same reason that we want to see high quality Bitcoin education out there in the world. And I think this, you know, the best way to do it ultimately is to create a sustainable business that can provide that service in a long-term way and really speed people along that sort of understanding of what Bitcoin is. You know, make it, instead of taking 6 months of like lots of work trying to, you know, get through that filter and read all this stuff and maybe get it done in a couple of months or a month or something and then go on to the more in-depth stuff, which, you know, the business could also provide if there's enough resources. So what do you think on the timing question though?
My having been here through, I don't know, I guess it's 4 just enormous bubbles. bear markets are always the time to build. So yeah,
that's what I've gathered too.
Yeah. It's where your filter gets cleaner and you know, there's not so much shit clogging up the corners.
Right.
And so
the noise dies away a bit.
Yeah. You can get more streamlined into what you're doing so that you know what you're supposed to be building. Mm-hmm. And whether or not it will be, I think any service around understanding or helping people get a better, clearer image of what Bitcoin and these cryptocurrencies are at a mm-hmm. technical and philosophical level will be, there is some sustainable marketed like business there. There definitely is, because the demand is high. It's always in the bear markets. I think building in the middle of a hype bubble and trying to get out, you're going to end up missing that swing and you'll release the product when everybody is abandoning ship.
Right.
So definitely, as far as timing goes, get it out in the bear market and benefit from that Lindy effect. It's like Coinbase. Yep. Coinbase wasn't a huge company for, they were a market leader even early on.
Sure.
But they really just exploded in 2017 because they had been around and people knew they weren't going to exit scam, and they had survived and explosive growth and crash previously. So,
yeah, and I think Bitcoin education is a core piece of infrastructure, you know, really, just like Coinbase or exchanges in general, or mining companies in general, which also kind of similarly to Coinbase, Bitmain, you know, which made tons of money, and lots of miners made tons of money last year, and really industrialized the whole system. I think Bitcoin education as a core piece of infrastructure will move from sort of kind of freelance, one-off, scratching together a sustainable income to produce Bitcoin quality Bitcoin education content, like Jimmy and Andreas and Safedine, et cetera, into really the beginnings of an industry that I think will be pretty big. And it's, you know, online education is already growing enormously fast. And I think it's sort of the future of education in general. It's the present of education, but it will just keep continuing to grow. And I think Bitcoin is going to be a really big niche kind of market in online education, because it's everything, you know, it's everything. It affects everything. It affects every person. The potential market is every single person on the planet.
Yeah, the social scalability is kind of out of control. There is no limit, really. Explicitly segue back to what we were talking about earlier, it is specifically because of the energy cost and the completely unbiased independence of the math of the proof of work, proof of work, that it has that social scalability, and it can be a benefit and medium of cooperation for the entire world, absent any specific jurisdiction boundaries. Just all of that could fall away.
And you know, Nick Szabo talks about the idea of social scalability, and in his blog, Unenumerated blog, and you know, if social scalability is the idea that you can overcome shortcomings in human minds, and the motivating and constraining aspects of the institution that you're talking about, in this case, Bitcoin, that might limit who or how people or how many people can successfully participate, right? And I think in order to socially scale in the best way possible, you really just need educated or good citizens of Bitcoin to sort of be a model citizens of this kind of new economy, and help their friends and family, you know, along with the transition. I think that'll play a big role in how everything plays out. So
I agree. And a funny thing is the Nick Szabo's money blockchains and social scalability is, I think I'd have to check, but I'm pretty sure it's still one of my, if not the most, it is definitely one of the top three most listened episodes of my entire podcast. And that was all the way back in like episode 60 or something like that. I can't remember.
It's an important read for sure. To understand Bitcoin. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of where I'm at in terms of thinking about this. And, you know, so if there's anyone listening out there who is a Bitcoiner who understands the importance of Bitcoin education to the way Bitcoin evolves and is adopted, you know, hit us up. We'd love to talk to you more about getting something going. So,
yeah, definitely. I think there's a ton of opportunity here. I want to ask your opinion on, for everything that we've kind of hit so far, because social scalability and Szabo's work in particular, I think is a really, it's one of those examples of something where it's more about the philosophy and the theory of it that you don't get from places like Coursera and Udemy and those kinds of things, but is so critical to understanding it. Where do you think, having come in mid-2017, and more recently kind of jumped these hurdles yourself, what's the biggest gap? What's the largest education hurdle that you think where either people believe something that's the polar opposite, that's just wrong, or they're completely ignorant of it, or some misconception, or is it computer literacy? Is it like, where do you think that gap, the worst gap is?
I think the biggest conceptual leap that needs to be made by somebody who's just coming into this is understanding that that most 99% of altcoins and those projects don't matter or won't matter in the future. And that, you know, for a couple of reasons, which we've talked about on my podcast, I know, we just talked about it, with you, well, on the episode you were on Citizen Bitcoin, which was posted yesterday, Wednesday, I think. Anyway, yeah, we talked about it then too. It's just that conceptual leap from just ignore that stuff, right? At least at first, like if maybe you won't be convinced, the Bitcoin maximalism is the most likely, right way to interpret what's happening right now. It's definitely worth your time and an efficiency trade-off like calculation to like at least explore Bitcoin maximalism first, because then you don't have to, if you, you know, find it compelling, then you don't have to do anything else like research any of the other stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like decide that first, is what I would say. And like that, once you make that leap, then you can decide what you're going to do with the rest of your time based on what you just, you know, the choice you make or decision you make.
Yeah. I think that's probably a good position to take is Bitcoin maximalism as the default when entering the space. Yeah. And then require someone to convince you that it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know, like branch out and let somebody learn the Bitcoin maximalist position first.
Yeah.
And I think a part of that, which I think is I personally think is the biggest gap, which is why Bitcoin maximalism is both likely the kind of the 90% of the reality of this whole space,
mm-hmm.
But in addition, why it the barrier to getting people to Bitcoin maximalism is something that Saifedean's book, The Bitcoin Standard, covers, is the economics and the money. And I think that's why that book is so important, is that I think that is the main delineation between understanding Bitcoin maximalism and basically feeling like you're in this just spaghetti bowl of altcoins and ICOs and not having the slightest clue how to pick out one from the other.
Right.
It's the Austrian economic theory and the basis of what money is historically and today. Mm-hmm. What role does it serve? Because a lot of people just don't. I mean, if you ask the average person what money is, you won't get.
Oh, no. No doubt.
Like, I don't know. I mean, it's
had to think about it, really.
It's, you know, I want a sandwich and I give them paper.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's been decided for us for so long that it's just not something that seems that needs to be talked about, but
you don't even stop and think about it. It's the definition of that phrase. Does the fish know it's wet, kind of thing?
Exactly. Yeah.
Always in the water. It does not even consider that there is something not wet in the world.
Yeah, exactly. And I think understanding kind of the twin foundations of Bitcoin maximalism, the technological, like the fact that network protocols tend toward one, and that money tends toward one when it's chosen by consumers on an open marketplace, then that's it. I mean, so you have those two forces working in favor of Bitcoin, plus you have all the network effects that Trace Mayer talks about. He identifies 7 network effects. I don't have them memorized, but you know, the most important of which are the developers. We have Bitcoin has the best developers in terms of quality and quantity by, you know, an order of magnitude, at least over the next closest project. You know, and that's that same principle just applies to all the aspects of Bitcoin, and then to money itself. So it seems to make sense. And then you rid yourself of, you know, even having to dive into all that, you know, like confusing stuff that's rife with scams. And it's just, So that's where I'd say people need to start. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, I think we're kind of on the same page there. Now, one major thing I wanted to hit that I think, and we talked about this before the show, and I think you're right that it should be avoided, but I kind of wanted to get you to drop your take on it again.
Yeah.
Is that particularly with the economics and money, is there's a lot of political contention around what is, you know, correct or or right in the sense of that. And it flies in the face. Like, I mean, if you try to explain Bitcoin to Paul Krugman, like, he's not mm-hmm. going to, you know, you're never going to get him to drop his economic philosophy to
right.
understand sound money. And that has pretty serious political implications, of particularly for people who think that the government should be in charge of almost mm-hmm. everything. Do you think that should be addressed, ignored, or just hit? This is what Bitcoin is. It exists. Take it or leave it.
Yeah. So, like, should it be addressed by like a Bitcoin education curriculum?
Yes, in an education sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it has to be talked about for sure. Because there, you know, I think you focus on Bitcoin, the system itself, and the system itself is not political, you know, it's an apolitical system, which is one of its best qualities. But that's not to say that the consequences of adopting the system is apolitical, you know, because you're moving from a political system. and just human society is not going to get rid of politics. Bitcoin's not going to kill politics, right? I mean, politics is the way we try to decide collectively our value system as a society. It's going to have effects, and that should be acknowledged and talked about. I think at first, especially, I would not have the curriculum spend a lot of resources, I guess, supporting educating about the political implications or discussing the political implications of Bitcoin. I would focus on the system and educating about it, and let people kind of go out and use other forums, I think, to debate the political and social implications. That's sort of be how I started. Just to, you know, you got to focus your product offering and your service, and make sure you don't get distracted. And that's just a whole kettle of lots of worms.
That's not a can of worms. That's a shipping crate with cans of worms.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I think that'd be my answer as like an entrepreneur, or a CEO of a, or somebody who's leading a Bitcoin education business.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think it's important to talk about, obviously. I just think, you know, let that happen on other forums. So.
Yeah, and it's amazing too, though, is that Bitcoin in a political sense is as unbiased as you can get. And there will inevitably be pushback specifically because it does not take what is perceived as the important social issue at the time and then force it onto everyone. Instead, mm-hmm. it literally could not care less about, like, math is completely independent to what color you are, what sex you are, what jurisdiction you live under, so on and so forth. Your culture is absolutely external to what is going on in the system. And Bitcoin won't pat you on the back or make you feel better or hate you or anything for any of those reasons. It cannot, by definition. So
exactly. So yeah. And I think that's, you know, a beautiful thing about Bitcoin.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Was there anything else specific you wanted to hit? I think I'm running towards the end of my list here.
I am too. Yeah, I think we hit all the kind of big points I wanted to talk about. Appreciate you having me on, man.
Yeah, dude. It's always fun. Enjoy the chat. Did you want to, you know, plug your podcast, like, final thoughts?
Sure. Yeah. So you can follow the podcast, find it at citizenbitcoin.world, WORLD, citizenbitcoin.world on the web. You can follow the feed from there. There's a link to subscribe from Apple Podcast/iTunes, whichever you want to call it. Really would love to have some people leave some reviews on iTunes. That really does help. Like the first few, we only have one from me right now. So the first few you did.
I reviewed yesterday.
Nice.
Yep.
Awesome. Okay. I didn't check this morning, but I appreciate that. You said you were going to. But the first few make a big difference. Just getting to like 4 or 5 can help a lot in terms of exposure. So that would be a huge help right now. We're on at Citizen Bitcoin on Twitter and on the Bitcoin Hackers instance of Mastodon as well. So would love to hear from you and any thoughts you might have on my takes and things you'd like to hear on the podcast. And et cetera. So,
all right. Cool story, man. It was wonderful having you on the show, talking as always. And I'll stay in touch. And
all right,
thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. Take care.
Later. All right, I will be sure to add all the links so you can check out the Citizen Bitcoin podcast. He's at Citizen Bitcoin on Twitter. And so you can keep up to date on what they're up to. I think they've got some projects in the work that I think are going to be pretty exciting. And I know I'm going to keep in touch with him, so we should see some cool stuff from them on the horizon, I think. And yeah, don't forget to follow me if you have not, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, and leave us a review as well if you are enjoying the show. Like Brady said, it really is a huge help. You can find me on Twitter at TheCryptoEconomy, and I have my Mastodon link in there as well if you want to hang out with some Bitcoin OGs and maximalists in the Mastodon social media space. And at Medium as well, also at The Crypto Economy. And don't forget that you always are able to donate to the show if you would like to support what I am doing and the work we got going on here. There's a lot of stuff going on in the background. And like I said, there's going to be some announcements this week. So stay tuned. Hit that subscribe button and don't miss the next couple of episodes. We got a fun week ahead. And outside of that, you can don't forget to get your Trezor wallet. If you haven't gotten your hardware wallet yet, you need to. And I have an affiliate link so that you can buy your Trezor, and at no cost to you, you'll send a couple of bucks my way. And if you're thinking of buying it sometime in the future, save your bookmarks for the Trezor shop as my affiliate link so that you will always support the show whenever you buy from Trezor. All right, it's a wonderful hardware wallet. I swear by it. And definitely recommend it for anybody holding crypto. All right, guys, we will close this one here. Thank you so much for joining me, and I will talk to everybody tomorrow with another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.